This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. The topic tonight is workplace investigations of discrimination, harassment, retaliation, and bullying. My guest is Amy Oppenheimer, chair of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Her workplace investigations and training law office are in Berkeley, California. Or I should say is in Berkeley, California. Amy, nice to have you here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Great to have you here. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Amy, you have specialized in investigations and training. Tell us a little bit about what that means.
Well, most lawyers, or you think of lawyers, as litigating for one side or the other, but pretty early into my career, after representing plaintiffs for a while, I realized that I didn't really want to be an advocate for one side or the other, and I saw all of these intractable problems in workplaces and got interested in how you can prevent them or respond to them. So I got involved in doing training for supervisors, managers, line employees, and then got involved with working with human resource professionals. And now mostly what I do is I'm brought in if there's a serious complaint and the employer might not have the internal resources or might not have somebody sort of at a high level enough to come in and do an investigation, let them know what's going on so they can hopefully do the right thing. Like a doctor is going to diagnose something, I'm going to come in and say, you know, this is what the problem is. This is what's going on here.
But you don't solve it. Is that right?
Well, I wish I could.
Okay.
Usually what I'm doing is fact-finding. I'm figuring out what's going on here that might be serious enough to violate your principles, your important rules, or the law, and what are the facts that you need to know about that so that you can fix it. Occasionally, I might be brought in later to help with a solution, but mostly I'm part of a process where the employer's got a responsibility to fix it if there's a problem, but they first have to really understand the nature of the problem.
What about the concern of employees? If obviously, you do your investigation in the areas, as I mentioned in introducing the program, area of discrimination, harassment, retaliation, and bullying. What if an employee is being subjected to any one or more of these but is concerned about retaliation?
Well, there are both laws and rules against retaliation. Of course, people say, well, you know, there can be lots of laws and rules. It doesn't mean that it's not going to happen, and it can be subtle. So it's obviously a concern, and employees have to make a decision about, you know, is this serious and do I feel that I can be protected? It's up to them if they want to bring a complaint. But in my experience, most employers want to know if there's a serious problem going on and generally want to protect that employee to the extent that they can. And you know, most problems get worse. And so by not bringing it forward, it's not going to make things better either. I recognize for some people it may be a hard choice coming forward. But certainly I've seen a lot of success stories where by coming forward, something's able to be remedied in a way that people can go forward with their jobs. Now, you know, if there's some serious harassment going on, somebody may lose their job.
When you say serious harassment, what do you mean by that? Are we talking about sexual harassment or something more than that?
It could be sexual harassment. It could be based on race or religion or some other protected category. But I also do a lot of bullying cases.
Would you define bullying for us? What does that mean?
Well, it's interesting that the California legislature recently defined bullying. They call it abusive conduct. And I don't have the definition in front of me, but basically repeated or severe conduct that's belittling or humiliating, or intimidating. It's not just a supervisor who's supervising someone closely. It crosses a line and becomes more personal and in terms of really putting somebody down, criticizing them publicly.
Do you see much of this? Much of bullying?
You know, bullying and harassment exist in most workplaces to some extent because people are human and people cross lines.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of people may think they are experiencing bullying when it may just be close management that they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
But I also
when you say
see
close management, what does that mean?
A manager who is
looking over your shoulder all the time?
More than the employee would like.
Mm-hmm.
Micromanaging isn't really bullying. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, insulting somebody, raising your voice to somebody, that can be bullying. And so there's a lot. Yes, I've seen it's not infrequent that people cross that line. And it's a lot of powerful people and mm-hmm. don't understand the impact of their behavior at work.
Which can be more damaging than positive. If you're bullying someone because you don't think that person is perhaps performing as well as you would like that person to perform, but if you bully that person, it's probably going to make it that much worse, I would think. I don't know.
No, it's certainly counterproductive.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people who engage in that behavior would benefit from early intervention and some one-on-one training for themselves.
What kind of training? When you say one-on-one, what kind of training is this?
Management training. I do, in addition to doing the investigation, sometimes I do one-on-one work with somebody who's violated harassment rules mm-hmm. to, so that they can understand what their behavior looks like and feels like, the impact of it, and how to modify that behavior.
What if an employer believes that there's something wrong in that office over there? The atmosphere doesn't feel right. What is the obligation? What is the responsibility of the employer to not turn around and walk away, but to try to face it? Are you finding that employers are reluctant to do something about this, or do you find that they really want to improve the work situation?
I see both.
I really
people
do. Are people, aren't they? Yeah.
You know, some employers, even if they don't have a specific complaint, sometimes they'll have me go in and do an assessment and just say, "This, we have a sense there's problems here. Just interview people. We don't have a complaint." Others are, they don't want to hear about it unless it's, you know, that knocks them over the head. But the more proactive the employer can be, the more they're going to prevent things from getting very serious. Now, once they have notice, they really do have a responsibility to respond.
And by that, you were formerly an administrative judge in
the
state of California. In the employment law area?
I heard unemployment appeals. So
I see.
I heard a lot of people who quit because they found the working conditions intolerable and having to decide in the relatively short amount of time you have in a hearing, you know, how bad was it? Were there other alternatives? And sometimes there aren't.
With all of your experience, if employees are listening, and I hope they are, to this program, are being subjected to one or more of these problems that you're talking about on this program, what recommendation do you have to them or for them as to how they should approach this? If they've been waiting a while and hoping it would improve, but it hasn't improved, what recommendation do you have, generally speaking?
Well, first of all, I think they need to really sit down and figure out, is the behavior serious enough to violate the rules and expectations at work, or is it just a really bad match with a supervisor? Because if it's just sort of the micromanagement, they may get frustrated with the whole investigation process. But if they're really crossing the line, their supervisor or a coworker, then they've got to figure out, are they able to really handle it themselves? If not, they've got to go to somebody and get some help.
And not just be patient and not just bury their head.
Usually doesn't work.
All right, it's our monthly Call a Lawyer night. If you're listening to this program live, and we're doing this on May 25th, and if you have questions for Off the Air, this is our monthly Call a Lawyer night. And the number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. For workers' compensation law, Alice O'Sullivan, certified specialist, is not here, but she's at home, and you can call her between now and 9 p.m. California time. Area code 510-333-3314. Area code 510-333-3314. We have for labor and employment law, Ellen Mendelson. For landlord-tenant law, Joseph LaPera. And for tax law, real estate, who, and he's also a real estate broker, Frank Adam. And tomorrow, if you're being chased by creditors, Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available tomorrow, Thursday, May 26th, from 8 a.m. to noon at 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. Let me, for those of you who've tuned in just a little bit late, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is Amy Oppenheimer, chair of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. She focuses on workplace investigations of complaints of discrimination, harassment, retaliation, and bullying. She's also the chair of the of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. Give us a little, just a synopsis of what it is that you do as the chair, and what is the role, as far as consumers are concerned, of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar.
Well, most of what we do is educating lawyers and the public about labor and employment law. One of the unique things is that we do rotate between leadership of a plaintiff's lawyer, a defense lawyer, and a neutral like myself, because there are a lot of neutrals in our field as well.
Mm-hmm. Tell us, if you would, before you go on, neutral. What do you mean by that?
Somebody who, for me, I'm doing an impartial investigation.
I
am hired by the employer because really there is no system where the employee could hire me, and it would be expensive and untenable for them to be able to do that. But they're hiring me to tell them the facts, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Mm-hmm.
I do some mediation and arbitration, so certainly there's neutrals who do that as well. They're probably better known. But doing workplace investigations has developed as a whole cottage industry amongst people who used to litigate in the employment field and would mm-hmm. like to do something that isn't that is in a more impartial role and hopefully helps people figure out the problems and resolve them before they litigate. Ideally, that can happen.
It makes a lot of sense.
Well, I think it does.
So the Labor and Employment Law Section, by the way, which, as you know, has been a funder of this mm-hmm. program for, it's got to be well over 20 years. And we've been trying on this radio program, as you may know, to educate people about the law, both their rights and their obligations, and prevention of problems, self-help if possible, and what do you do if neither of those work, and how do you find a lawyer, et cetera. What goals does the section have at this point?
Well, partly, as I said, educating lawyers, that we also have new projects going on, working on cooperation between lawyers mm-hmm. so that even in litigation, people are coming to more agreements to save money for both sides, less contention, looking at ways that
How do you do that? When you talk about cooperation between, let's say, the employee and the employer or whatever it may be, how do you generate that cooperation?
Well, in any situation, there's things that you agree about and there's things you disagree about. And the things you disagree about, of course, are the things you're investigating, you're litigating. But to put aside and say we're not going to disagree about everything because we do agree on these things, or we're not going to take everything to the mat because we know that each side has certain issues that are legitimate, let's figure out really where we have our essential disagreement and focus on that and not spend all of our time and money and anger focusing on those other things that are just going to, you know, spin our wheels instead of getting to the kernel of what the issue is.
As an investigator of workplace complaints, in what you are doing, do you believe that you're the good, the bad, and the ugly that you report to whoever has retained you to do this? Do you believe that this approach to problems in the workplace can help to reduce the actual litigation that might have happened otherwise?
I definitely do. I mean, it's not going to eliminate litigation altogether, and I don't know that it should. There are cases that should be litigated. But there are a lot of cases in the labor and employment field, probably in all fields, that really shouldn't be. And most of the cases that I'm involved in resolve at one point or another, usually pre-litigation. And I certainly like to think that by giving the employer an objective report, that's a roadmap to, here's your problem, fix it now, don't wait.
Mm-hmm. So you then, after you do your investigation, you prepare a written report pointing out what's going on here and what the problem is. Do you make recommendations as to how the employer should deal with the problem that's in front of him or her or them?
Usually not, if I come in and say, well, I think you should do it this way, but the employer's always dealt with it a different way and been successful, and they've got some outsider saying do it this way, it puts them in a difficult position.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to give them all of the information so that they've got what they need to make a determination. But, for example, a public employee may have different rights than a private employee, so there may be less flexibility about what the employer can do about that particular situation.
Mm-hmm.
There may be some history that I'm not aware of that makes it more serious. So a situation that to me didn't look as serious maybe leads to a termination because of that history that I wasn't privy to. So I don't want to overstep my role.
What about the situation if employees in a situation where there is a problem here, whether it's discrimination, whether it's harassment, retaliation, or bullying? If there is a union involved, how do you, if you've been brought in to do the investigation, how do you relate to the union, if you do?
Well, if people want to have a union rep present, that's fine. Whether, even if they're not unionized, if they want a representative present, that's fine. It's often a difficult situation for a union because you have one employee complaining against another. They both might be unionized. And so who does the union represent?
That's a good point.
Do they represent both or neither? Mm-hmm. I mean, that comes up in sexual harassment cases where the person who's being harassed is outraged because her union is representing the person she's accusing of harassing her. And so that can lead to some problems if he's getting representation and she's not, assuming the sort of classic female
complaint. Does that create a problem for you, though? If you've been, if the employer in this situation sees this sexual harassment going on, and both of these people are represented by a union, does it create a problem for you as the investigator to do a thorough job since there is a union involved?
Mostly it doesn't.
Occasionally,
a union representative will become so over-involved that they won't really let the individual answer for themselves. And part of what I have to do is hear their story and determine credibility. And so if the union rep becomes obstructionist and won't allow that, they're really harming the employee more than helping, because then I don't have the opportunity to really hear that person. Mostly union reps understand that, and we work very well together, but occasionally there's some friction.
If there is a sexual harassment situation going on, whether there's a union situation or not, do you generally try, as you do your investigation, to talk to the person who is the victim of sexual harassment as well as the perpetrator? Do you try to talk to both of them?
Of course. I mean, it would not be fair to only talk to one party. The hallmark of a good investigation is fairness and thoroughness for everyone.
And I would think so. And in just a moment, because we're doing this program live, I'm going to make a little announcement. All right, everybody. This is our Call a Lawyer night, monthly Call a Lawyer night. We're doing this program live on Wednesday, May 25th. If you have questions for attorneys off the air, we have several attorneys who would be very happy to help you. They no obligation on your part, by the way. It's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. And that's labor and employment law, Ellen Mendelson, landlord-tenant law, Joseph LaPera, tax law, real estate law, Frank Adam. And if you have questions about workers' compensation law, certified specialist Alice O'Sullivan will answer your calls tonight, May 25th, from 7 until 9 p.m. at 510-333-3314. 510-333-3314. And tomorrow morning, Thursday, May 26th, from 8 a.m. to noon, Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be happy to talk with you. Again, no obligation, 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. For those of you who are listening to this program live, I will be giving in a few minutes the toll-free number for you to call in and speak with my guest. For those of you who are not familiar with what we're doing, we are live in the San Francisco Bay Area for a full hour. We're live on the internet at www.kow.org, and we are live on the NPR satellite. The program is uplifted to the satellite, the full hour on National Public Radio satellite. And for those of you who do listen to the program live, you will get our number and have a chance to talk with my guest in the second half hour of the program. Well, in that, we're dealing with very serious problems here in the workplace. And in that, the role that you play is one to try to help resolve this. What if you can't? What if you come up with a recommendation, this person who is bullying is just uncontrollable? How does an employer deal with that person?
Well, again, it's not really my job to resolve it, but mm-hmm. if I made a finding that there was serious conduct that was going on and it was repeated, the employer's got to remedy the situation. And generally in harassment, the law is that they've got to take the steps that they need to stop the harassment. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. let's say somebody's been warned and it escalates, they've got to take more serious action. That may be termination. Mm-hmm. Certainly I've been involved in cases where people are terminated. It may be that a lesser discipline would be successful. It's going to depend on the situation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to decide the discipline.
Sure,
though.
No, of course. Of course. You're reporting what you found. And do you feel, generally speaking, when you have the opportunity to talk to someone who is the victim of one of these problems, that they are that person or those persons are being open with you, or do you feel they're very hesitant to really give you the full story because they're concerned, gee, if I say too much here, maybe I'm going to be the one who's going to be disciplined, et cetera?
Once people make a complaint and take that step, they're usually going to be pretty open. Mm-hmm. It's hard to sort of hold back when you're spending time with somebody and following up on their when they are hesitant. Now, there's times that witnesses may know something and they're just not willing to say because they don't want to get involved.
Do you, if you have an opportunity during your investigation to talk with witnesses, do you generally try to do that?
Oh, yes. And it's important to me that if an employer retains me, I'm going to choose who I think it's important to talk to. Mm-hmm. I may mm-hmm. talk to a previous employee. Mm-hmm. It may be that it's important for me to speak with people who are no longer with the employer or to look at certain documents. And if I think that they're relevant, I expect that I'm going to get them.
Are you finding when you do these investigations that generally the employers are very cooperative with you? And if you want to interview previous employees, will the employers, generally speaking, give you the names and contact information for those people?
Usually. Mm-hmm. Usually they feel like if they've taken the step to retain me to do this, then they understand that they've got to give me the freedom to do what I think that I need to, or they're not really going to get the product that they've hired me to do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes somebody will say, well, this particular previous employee, you know, has a beef with us. So I want you to, you know, think about how necessary it is. And if they're an important witness, I'll say they are. And if I was on the fence, I might say, well, they're not going to add that much. Maybe it's not worth stirring it up. But I have to evaluate if they're going to be significant to my findings.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned that you do some mediation.
Yeah, I do some.
We are going to, as I think you know, in a couple of weeks, we're going to do a program on mediation with Michelle Longfelder, who I think you know.
Yes,
you
not know? She does investigations
what,
as well.
What role and how significant do you feel in a workplace problem such as you've described for us? Can mediation be helpful?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. And what she does that's somewhat unique is a lot of mediators will get involved only through litigation. But Michal and I will do this as well, and I have some colleagues get involved when people are still working there and would like to stay working there, mm-hmm. trying to resolve the issue so that the employment doesn't have to end. Also, I want to do a little plug here, if it's okay. I met Michal in the context of a professional organization mm-hmm. for workplace investigators, which was founded in 2011. And I was the founder of it at a time when I thought, oh, you know, it'll be a small organization of people who do this sort of thing. But I know there's others. And now we've got hundreds of members. We're international. There are so many people who need more training and colleagues in this area mm-hmm. So that we now have a Australian chapter, a Canadian chapter. We did our first training in Canada. So if there's people out there who are interested in this kind of work, it's an interesting field.
So you're talking about mediation that is prior to the filing of any lawsuit.
Yeah, when I was talking about this organization, it's an organization of investigators. Mm-hmm. Some of those people do mediation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But what brings us together are the investigations. But yes, when you were asking about the mediation, what's unusual is that it's pre-litigation mediation.
I see.
While people are, and it's pre-separation from employment mediation. And with the idea being, like I have another colleague, Adele Grunberg, who mm-hmm. goes into mainly through the state mediation services. When there's a dysfunctional work environment and a complaint, they'll send her in to work with the people mm-hmm. to try to resolve it. So. That you don't get a serious complaint, that you're able to
improve it.
Yeah, no, it's a great program.
That's very positive.
The post office has actually a great mediation program, too, for its employees.
How long has the post office had that? A long, long time?
Many years.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. The organization, again, that you have founded, what is it called?
The Association of Workplace Investigators.
Do you have a website that people can?
I do.
Would you give it to us, please?
Yeah. www.awi.org.
Do it again, will you?
awi.org.
Well, that's pretty simple.
It is pretty simple. And I brought with me, we have guiding principles for workplace investigations. And
you're going to give that to me or give me a copy.
That's for you.
I got to have it. I got to have it for the future. Well, all right, so we have just about come to the end of the statewide version of the program, which is the first half hour, which is then recorded and distributed to 15 other stations in California. Okay, everybody, it is now, I want to give you our toll-free number for you to call in and talk with my guest, Amy Oppenheimer. It's 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And it is also our monthly Call a Lawyer night. We're doing this program live on Wednesday, May 25th. So if you're listening to it on May 25th, you can call in and you can speak, pardon me, you can speak to attorneys off the air, no obligation on your part whatsoever. That's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. 9917. We have with us at the studio here, KALW in San Francisco, for labor and employment law, Ellen Mendelson, for landlord-tenant law, Joseph LaPera, for tax law, real estate, Frank Adam, and for workers' compensation law, certified specialist Alice O'Sullivan, a former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization. She'll take your calls until 9 o'clock tonight. That's Wednesday night, May 25th. Her number is 510-333-3314. 510-333-3314. Tomorrow, if you're being chased by creditors, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available to speak with you. That's Thursday, May 26th from 8 a.m. to noon, and that number is 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. If you get a, let's say, voicemail, leave your name and phone number, say you're a listener of Your Legal Rights, and Mr. Baer will call you back. We'll take our first call in just a minute. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County, and for referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you are in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a lawyer referral service. And, of course, a bar association. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the story is, and they'll do their best to find someone for you and try to help you out. With minor exception, the charge for a half an hour consultation is $25 to $35. It's a great investment if you're trying to get some basic information about your rights and obligations. Additional funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Now, let's see. We have Tamara. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Thank you. I have a question. It's for a friend of mine. I was trying to get her to call the show, but I don't think she's available. I work with someone who might be being bullied at work, and she has documented all of the interactions between her and the person who's doing it. What is the next step now that California has defined it? What is the next step, especially if going to HR might be sort of a hostile thing? Is there anything before going to HR that someone should do, or what suggestions do you have?
Well, I think it really depends on whether she feels that she can handle it on her own. Bullying is not actually against the law, but on the one hand. On the other hand, the legislature did mandate that people should be trained about bullying, and in my experience, most employers don't want their employees to be bullied, and they need to know about it and take some action. A lot of times there might be a rule against that kind of conduct, regardless of whether it violates the law. And so the question is, can she talk directly to this person and have an impact? And if not, then she does have to get HR involved, because she's not being successful in turning the behavior around on her own.
Okay. Thank you. That was very, very helpful.
Tamara. Thank you very much for calling. Dave, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, good evening, Chuck and Amy. I just wanted to bring up with your guest, what happens when the harassment comes from your supervisors, and the supervisors, their supervisors, or your supervisors, and they refuse to deal with it. What happened in my case? It was many years ago. We had in our department, we'd started a new unit, and I was assigned to work there. I had been asked to go to a meeting with the second in command of that new unit, which I did at 8 o'clock one morning, and this is way back in 1988. Now, I should preface that I happen to be a blind person, and I had been at that time employed in the agency I worked for, I'm going to say 10 years, maybe 10, 11 years, I think it was. I walked into the office, into the office with this man whom I had never met until that morning, and I still remember his name, believe it or not. Well, and he said, "The first thing I want to tell you is that you're not welcome to work here." And I kind of went, "Okay." And
wow.
I had to assume, and I still do, that it was because of my blindness. I reported this immediately after the meeting concluded. I don't even remember what else we talked about, by the way, in that meeting, but I do remember that comment. And, you know, some time later, I came back and said, "Well, it never happened." Well, it did happen. I was there, but so was he, and it was his word against mine. They obviously chose to believe the, you know. What does one do in a situation like that? If this happened today, how would one deal with that kind of thing?
Well, I don't know that you deal with it differently. What I do hope is that the HR community is better educated about how to make findings in an investigation. Most of the investigations that are done aren't done by lawyers like me. They're done by HR. And a lot of what I do is train HR, and that's a lot of what this association that I founded does, and to raise the bar in what's expected. One of the biggest misconceptions in HR investigations is that you need some higher level of proof, that your word isn't good enough, and your word should be good enough.
Well, it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can appreciate that, and I certainly can't say that it would necessarily be with anybody now, but I would want to understand why you weren't believed, and know that whoever looked into this, you know, took it seriously and really carefully analyzed your complaint. I guess I'm wondering what happened after that.
Yeah, what happened? There? We've got to know, Dave. What happened?
Nothing, really.
Were you fired?
No. No, I wasn't fired. I actually ended up working with this outfit and was very... I had a relatively successful time with them. I will say that the agency for whom I worked was we did end up in almost litigation because 12 years later, because they were refusing to promote me, but that's another story, and that was settled, and I left the organization. So,
well, thank you for calling, Dave, sure. And I appreciate. Do you think when this fellow, when you walked in his office and said, "You're not welcome to work here," do you feel that was aimed at the fact that you were blind? Dave, are you there?
It sounds like he did think that from what he said.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you, Dave, very much. All right. Antonio, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Yeah, hi, you're on the air.
My question is sort of a general type of question. I understand that there's a law in the United States that people who are not legally in the country cannot take a job. However, the factories and all kinds of places have been flooded with people who have no legal papers in the United States, and they are working anyway. I was displaced by an influx of those people, and I wonder what the advice is from the council on these issues, because I don't see that law is enforced.
Well, let's get some comment for you, Antonio. Thank you for calling. Turn your radio back up. Do you have some thoughts for him?
Well, you know, if what you're asking is if somebody's not legal but they're working anyway, do they still have rights?
Yes.
They do. And there is case law that if somebody's being sexually harassed, even if they're not here legally, they have a legal right to bring a case. Mm-hmm. And there are some protections for them. Now, again, this is in theory. In reality, somebody who's working but not legal is going to feel much more vulnerable and maybe more reluctant to complain, which is why the law, you know, changed over the last few years, encouraging people to complain, because it's there's a fair amount of sexual harassment. Some field workers and transient workers who aren't legal and who are especially vulnerable because of the fear of being deported.
When you suggest that they should complain, who should they complain to?
Well, again, really, you know, if they're going to go internal, they should complain to HR. But if they feel that they can't trust HR, mm-hmm. and if it is based on a protected category like sexual harassment mm-hmm. or gender, national origin, et cetera, then they can also complain to either the Department of Fair Employment and Housing.
That's the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing.
Correct. Or the EEOC, the federal agency.
I see. Right.
Either one.
Well, there you are, Antonio. I hope you heard that. Let me give our toll-free number again to you, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is Amy Oppenheimer, chair of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. Her workplace investigations and training law office is in Berkeley, California. And I hope that if you have questions in the area of employment law, whether you're an employer or an employee, I would hope that you would call in. The toll-free number, 866-798-8255. It's also our monthly Call a Lawyer night. We're doing this program live on Wednesday evening, May 25th. So if you are listening to the live program, and the reason I say this is because the entire, pardon me, the entire program is uplinked to the National Public Radio satellite and the whole hour. So I want to make sure that people understand that if you hear this delayed at some other date, you're not going to be able to call in. But we're doing this program live on Wednesday evening, May 25th. The Call a Lawyer number is 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917. I want to thank Ellen Mendelson for labor and employment law, Joseph LaPera for landlord-tenant law, Frank Adam for tax law, real estate law. I want to thank Alice O'Sullivan, workers' compensation law certified specialist. She'll take your calls until 9 p.m. California time tonight, May 25th, at 510-333-3314, 510-333-3314. And finally, tomorrow, Thursday, May 26th, Leon Baer, certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will take your calls between 8 a.m. and noon at 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. This is a public service that these attorneys are conducting. They're very giving of their time. There's no obligation on your part whatsoever, and I hope you will take advantage of it. Again, for On Air with Amy Oppenheimer, the toll-free number, 866-798-8255, and we welcome your calls. Please don't wait another 5 or 10 minutes because the program will be over. And I want to inform those of you who may be having problems with, let's say, repairs on your automobiles. We are going to do next week on Your Legal Rights the topic of the California State Bureau of Auto Repair and its mission to protect consumers and ensure fair and competitive auto repair. That's what we're doing next week on June 1st, in case you'd like to join us then. Alex, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hi. I just wanted to follow up on Antonio's call. I thought you and your guest didn't quite understand his question. He was asking what are his rights if he is displaced by an illegal worker, and how are the laws enforced to prevent illegal workers from actually displacing legal workers.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't. Thank you for clarifying.
Thanks, Alex.
It wasn't clear to me that that's what he was asking, but really there's sort of two different questions in there. One is, you know, what are your rights if you lose your job? Because if you lose your job because you're being displaced by someone who's not legally here, you don't have different rights than if you lose your job for other reasons. The question is, was it a proper layoff? Were you terminated without good cause? Or in which case, you certainly would have a right to unemployment benefits, and potentially, if there's a discrimination aspect, if there's a preference for one type of employee over another that's based on any protected category, then you might have rights under the Fair Employment and Housing Act or Title VII. I was thinking there were two parts to the question, and I've lost my train of thought.
I think you've got
it.
I think the answer that you gave before is still applicable. The Department of Fair Employment and Housing, that if you have had this kind of a problem with employment, you can file a complaint with the Department of Fair Employment and Housing, California, and the EEOC, the federal law, can you not?
If you're being displaced because you're a member of a protected category. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to make a link between the loss of the job and whatever protected category mm-hmm. that you're in. Now, of course, employers also don't have a legal right to hire an employee who is not legally entitled to work in this country, doesn't have the proper documentation. And that's something that certainly somebody could notify authorities about and would be investigated as well.
Yeah, Antonio did ask about how is this enforced.
Well, it's enforced through the immigration services.
Oh, okay, I mean, and so if he needed to report this, what would his avenue be?
That would be through immigration.
Okay.
Thank you, Alex, for clarifying that for us.
All right. I was curious about the answer myself, and I just thought that you didn't answer the question he asked.
I don't think we quite understood where he was coming from. Thank you very much for clarifying it.
All right.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. All right. Kim, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. I'm very grateful for this service that you're offering. I have a question. I'm in the middle of a situation myself where I was been bullied and personally attacked at work, and I address it. I spoke with the manager. We had a mediated conversation, but the person completely denies it. And so I'm at the point where I'm considering leaving. Mm. And
how long have you been there, Kim?
Only like a month. I'm very new, okay. which makes me more vulnerable.
Yeah.
So my question is, if in your experience you would just have any recommendations for me on my way out, you know, like if there's anything I don't know, like is unemployment mm-hmm. like an option? Like, are there like things?
Unemployment is an option if the administrative judge, or if unemployment finds, or if they don't and you appeal it, if an administrative judge finds that you quit for good cause. And if you are being bullied, and I'm sorry that you're experiencing this, and you've tried to resolve it and the employer is not resolving it, then that could be considered good cause. It's very factually intensive. You know, the judge is going to hear from both sides about what efforts you made to resolve it and how serious it was, and then make a determination. Now, sometimes if you've complained and you've not been able to work anything out, sometimes you might come to an agreement with the employer that they're not going to contest your unemployment, or that they're going to give you some severance to help you between jobs. It's harder when you haven't been there as long.
Right.
Although, in terms of unemployment, they also, it's not going to cost them very much. So they might be willing to discuss that.
Kim, I would suggest, you're in Alameda County, are you not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would suggest that you might want to contact the Alameda County Bar Lawyer Referral Service and see if you can have a half an hour consultation with an employment law attorney who represents employees It'll cost you $35. I think it's a very good investment for you to have a one-on-one with an attorney who's experienced and can take the time, which we can't on this program, obviously, to talk with you and tell you what you can or cannot do. Do you have the phone number for the bar? I'll give it to you if you don't.
I don't.
Okay. Sorry. Are you ready to write?
Yes.
Okay. 510-302-2222. Area code 510-302-2222. That's the Alameda County Bar Association number. Ask to speak to someone in the lawyer referral service. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone for you and set you up for a half an hour consultation. It's a great way to try to learn what your rights are and where you go from there.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Another referral is CELA. It's the California Employment Lawyers Association, because they're an association of lawyers who represent employees. And they also have names on their website of attorneys in your geographical area who represent employees. And so that's CELA.org.
Yeah, you can go to Google for them, Kim. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for calling. Rachel, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Rachel, are you there?
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, so I was interested in hearing more about retaliation in the workplace. Like, let's say you went to your HR director about your immediate boss, and then it ended up that they said, you know, in a couple days they would get back to you after they did some investigation, but instead of doing a real investigation, all they did was go straight to your boss and tell them exactly what you said, and then created a moment where it was like almost a gang-up situation, and then created kind of environment to kind of push that person out. And in my mind, that seems kind of retaliatory. If you went to HR and then later on things were just said to your boss, and then after that the environment is so toxic because, you know, a third party said things that you didn't feel like it was appropriate.
And so when you say the environment pushed somebody out, meaning that you not felt pushed out as a result of these responses from people? And
It was more like, then I heard from HR that I was another lower HR person, HR director, that I was going to be watched, and if I did anything wrong, I would be pushed out.
Mm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And then I had a moment where it was like, okay, this is what you're not doing right. I need you to do these things right. And then that was on a Friday, and then the Monday I was let go. And this was all within a four-day period. And I don't know, I just always left a really bad taste in my mouth. And I think this probably happens to other people, young professionals especially, trying to navigate, you know, if you have an immediate issue with somebody and you don't really think that they're, and you find out that they have a history of targeting people and either making them cry or messing with them. And then you find out, okay, wait, this is systematic and no one's doing anything about it. And so that was a really weird kind of professional environment to me. And it's a huge organization, and that's why I'm kind of worrisome that this is happening to other young people.
Well, you know, there's a lot in what you're asking, but I want to go back to the question of retaliation, which the law and your employer rules supposedly protect you from retaliation. But, you know, as I said earlier, that doesn't mean that people aren't going to misbehave. I always tell people you're protected, and also realize that that's a theoretical protection. And if the employer doesn't make good on that, then you're in a position where either you leave or you sue them or both, and which is a shame, because you know what you want is a job, not a lawsuit.
Well, not only that, it was like when you find out that, you know, you think you're making a real impact and you think that that's the mission of the organization, and you figure out that, no, it's actually about these people's egos. And that's really disheartening.
Well, it is. And sometimes you recognize you're in a company that you don't want to work for because of that type of attitude, and have to decide whether it's worth it to you to bring an action or not, or to just move on. Or you look for somebody within the organization who you have some trust for. if hopefully you can find that person.
Does that help you?
And it's very systematic because this company actually has huge, it's just a revolving door. They can't keep talent there because of the way talent's treated.
Yeah, well, it's not a good company if they're losing people and mistreating people, sure.
And that's where I get confused because I don't know if it's worth going and trying to do anything about because this is an organization that's a nonprofit, and it's kind of, you know, it would hurt a nonprofit to be sued. But if this is systematic and this is happening to an excess amount and they're picking egos over hard workers, that's a problem.
You know, Rachel, as with the previous caller, I think since I believe you're in San Francisco, are you not?
Yes.
I think you should call and make an appointment through the lawyer referral service of the San Francisco Bar with an employment law attorney who represents employees. Do you have the phone number?
No, but I can easily find it out. But you
well, here it is. Here it is. If you'd like to jot it down, 415-989-1616. 415-989-1616. Thank you very much for calling. And
Thank you.
Good luck to you. All right. We have a few minutes when attorneys for Call a Lawyer are here if you'd like to talk with them. 1-800-525-9917. Alice O'Sullivan will be available until 9 p.m. California time. Area code 510-333-3314. Leon Baer will be available tomorrow, Thursday, May 26th, from 8 a.m. to noon. 1-800-477-3111. We have for, let's see, CJ, we have if you can do it in 1 minute, can you give us what you have in 1 minute, please?
Yep.
Or quickly? Go ahead.
I have a situation where I'm in an environment where we are all scheduled to do particular tasks, but there are some people that get, there's some favoritism in my mind, and the other folks get scheduled with the same favorite people they want to be with, but yet I'm stuck with the runts that don't want to work. And I'm just wondering, I feel like that's one of the issues, and the other issue is a performance review. I haven't seen one of those in 5 years, and I keep after my employer to, hey, can I see my performance review? And I get lower scores when I'm doing the harder work. And it's kind of a lengthy question, but my question is that considered discrimination when you're singled out and put with particular people that you may not necessarily want to work with?
Can you do it very quickly, respond to him?
Favoritism could be discrimination, or it might not. It depends on whether it's based on a protected category. There may be rules against favoritism in any case, and it's certainly worth following up on it using that term. Scheduling, you're probably not going to get very far on, but if you talk about them together and the impact, then that's the direction I think you'd want to go in.
I want to thank you, Amy, very much for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on the program. Amy Oppenheimer is chair of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Her Workplace Investigations and Training Law Office is in Berkeley, California. Amy, thanks so much. Next week on Your Legal Rights, we're going to be talking about the California State Bureau of Auto Repair, its mission to protect consumers and ensure fair and competitive auto repair. My guest will be Donald Johnson, a Bureau of Auto Repair representative. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. Additional funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been funded by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Thanks for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and please join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.